Okay, so our next presenter, I have to look it up now, I forgot. I should just let him say it. Michael Prorok, and his title, Predicting Disease in the Field Before It Becomes an Issue.
Greetings. So I guess we're out of the student presentations here, and I'm not your typical presenter at these kinds of conferences. I'm normally presenting at tech conferences with Google and folks like that. Wanted to talk a little bit first about what we're doing. I know some of the folks here that I see have some familiarity with us, but basically we're in the business of delivering out actual prescriptive analytics to farmers in the field, give them just plain text, human readable, based on their location, advice on what they can and can't do. And to kind of feed that beast, that's, you know, really reliant on you guys and our university partners and, going out and collecting a lot of data. And we've been doing that recently with Cotton Inc., I guess, for the last 2 years now, and a number of partners from University of Tennessee to Auburn, Kentucky, NC State, probably a few others that I haven't mentioned. But how our system works is we take that data in from the field, whether that's field observations, population counts, surveys, et cetera, and increasingly some other things that we'll get into as well. And then link that up with effectively a geospatial time series database, which captures all the environmental data as along with things like soil moisture, soil temperature, leaf wetness, you know, effectively any feature that could possibly drive an outcome. And we pull that stuff together and have that additionally linked with a pretty significant graph database now of the interrelationships and effects of various species, whether they're positive, negative, et cetera. And that stuff ultimately at the end of the day, boils down to things that can give discrete recommendations back to an end user, whether that's a chem application, whether that's a, you know, biological control, a change in practice, et cetera. So, you know, when we started doing this, I guess about 4 years ago, shortly after that, we got working with a couple of the big chem guys and developed some techniques in the process of working with air, particularly in the turf and ornamental space. And we were able to pretty successfully go in and start targeting certain key critical species that were, you know, causing major cost impacts to various growers, whether that was a green space manager, golf course manager, a lot of orchard management, things like that. I've been getting heavily into Pseudomonas, other fungal type things. And then that's been building out quite well. So we've now got a good 3 to 5 years of validation data rolling back on a lot of models in that space. And over the last 2 years, we've been doing similar things with cotton. So as I mentioned, we tend to take in things like population amounts, control amounts on various plots. We pretty much insist on the location of the measurement because the actual microclimates come into play quite a bit. And then we also increasingly are taking in a lot of farm operational data, what was going on at the time of a sampling or before the time of the sampling, and then also increasingly more and more DNA sampling and analysis. So if any of y'all were at the airborne pathogen sampling meeting yesterday, one of the things that we've been doing with a number of university partners and with Cotton Inc. is deploying air traps out across the southeast, and I'll just show you what they look like first. And basically, popping out some windsocks that have a special filter and cassette at the back end of it that can capture spores and other things like insects for us. And then we send that off and get that DNA analyzed with a couple of partners and pull that data back into our system and link it into the timeline. And so this provides a variety of key data points back to us. We went into it initially thinking, hey, this will be just like the great field observational data we get from our normal research partners, and realized there were some differences there, right? There's a lot of speciation variation. Getting actual good probes and primers that can help us hone in on key species of concern can be quite problematic. But we've started to work out a lot of that stuff. Some of our key takeaways so far with the, you know, from our side of the air trap side has been that if we can increase the automation of some of that capture stuff, swap filters on a more regular basis, maybe shift to a more consistent
an active type of sampler, which we're doing some testing on now, that probably will help us from a machine learning standpoint, just because we can get very, very granular with some of those techniques as far as what species was present at exactly what time and what duration. So this is what some of the just initial data coming back in from this year so far looks like. So just looking at, and I think in theory I have a mouse, I don't know, but there we go. So just looking at week of year, at various locations, you know, by species, and all the data can be segmented by species, subspecies, et cetera. And then we have a good couple hundred, you know, all the key environmental variables plus another couple hundred extracted features that could be driving things like, you know, directionality of air temperatures and, fun stuff like that that gets factored in. And the way our system works is we link that observational data in along with any other field observations around the populations, the behavior, when was it actually observed, you know, on the plant itself, even if we were detecting DNA spores earlier, DNA from spores earlier. And then the system goes through and automatically starts to classify and build out a variety of different things from that. One of the outputs, obviously, is kind of your nonlinear curve type behaviors, whether that's logistic, omperts, you know, just basic curve structures of what defines the growth of this species and what defines the growth at various stages of life, right? And so one of the things that we see quite regularly is that a species may have a model, you know, univariate or multivariate, that describes the behavior of a species in the early part of its life cycle, and then a second model that describes, you know, a post-transition of a type of life cycle, or when a certain amount of biomass is reached and it tips over, and our system is set up to automatically identify those changes and derive those models and build them together into a composite model. Once that's done, we end up with some fun abilities, you know, everything from looking at it from a heat map standpoint on just regular mapping, but also going through and running stuff year over year and deploying that out, you know, across multiple sites, looking at risk levels, you know, and really any other thing you're after, right? When are likely population blooms, et cetera. In this case, this is around, you know, emergence timing and of a particular weed species, but this is our standardized output for going through and looking at multiple sites and trial site locations year over year, either on a daily basis or a week of year basis. One of the things that we've gotten into much more heavily over the last 6 months and just released publicly the first part of this year, I guess last week, is more and more application logging as well as other activity logging on the farm. And so this is helpful both from a grower standpoint, but is also really helpful when we're going in and trying to understand when we've made a, you know, recommendation back into a grower to go in and do something, what do they actually do, right? Did they follow that advice? Did they not? Did they do the right thing or not? Because that helps us start to understand that behavioral aspect from the grower standpoint. And that also goes back in and gives us some really good feedback as far as other things that could be driving behaviors that we're seeing in the data, whether that's field sampling data, automated sampling data, et cetera. So some overall key things that have come out for us out of the process of this year is that, you know, once, as long as you've got good source data, we're having great results from a model generation standpoint. I mean, we're seeing some quite remarkable results with certain things. Even with smaller sets of data, we're getting pretty good results. Certain species of fungus like Mycodochium, we've been able to start to get some decent models off of very limited sample sets. Same thing with certain insect species that we're tracking. And because of the continuous learning aspect that we've been applying, that's been letting us effectively go in and, you know, start with a smaller subsample, get some kind of rough model in or a fuzzy logic type model in just based on the known behaviors of species. Oh, it likes this temperature range and something else, and use that as a starting place and then begin to refine that into a more advanced model over time. One thing that's also been awesome is it's taken away huge amounts of processing time for folks we've been working with compared to a lot of the science project type stuff you used to get into in R or SAS and sit down and crunch a bunch of numbers. We're doing a lot of this stuff in seconds now, which is fantastic. The other thing is something that's interesting to me from a machine learning standpoint, and I think I skipped over it on another slide, But one of the things that highly interested in pulling in, and we noticed it especially this year, and it came very clear when talking and reviewing some results with Auburn yesterday, is that having the ability to attach causal information to various observations. So if we happen to see like a spike in Aspergillus, well, what was going on in that time? Was corn being harvested at that time or something else that would cause that to get up in the air and get picked up by the samplers? Because that lets us then, that extra tag of information, lets us discard that information for model creation or possibly weight it down, right? So it, being able to factor in that expert knowledge, something that I think is missing in a lot of, or is 100% manually done in existing machine learning approaches today. So with that, I'd like to do just a quick call out to some of our key partners in addition to Cotton Inc. We've been working with Phenotype Screening. Dan McDonald's around somewhere. They've been fantastic and actually got this whole thing kicked off from the air sampling side, which has been great for us. And then Assured Bio, who's out of Knoxville, has been doing all the DNA analysis for us. So any questions from anyone?
We certainly have time for a few questions.
Yeah, they are starting to look into some of that right now. And we're also, the other thing we've been doing is archiving samples as well. So in the event that we get better probes and primers later or get another, something that maybe we want to plate and see what's going on and is there growth going on, gives us that ability down the line. So. Yeah, so that's actually a fun one. So we try not to do it so much from the concentration of spores. And this is something that really is the concentration of spores is providing inputs from a model standpoint, which then we can go out and apply. One of the things we like to do is phrase things rather than saying, hey, you should go do something, right? In some cases, we do know that. Like, hey, you put fertilizer out and we know it's already degraded at this point, right? But in a lot of cases, especially if we have a low probability or a medium probability of an outcome, we may actually ask the user something. Are you seeing such and such? And if so, you may want to take this action and then give them the ability to let us know, like just a yes or no. And possibly attach other feedback or attach photos because we're starting to factor more of that into the machine learning side as well. And so that's been very helpful from an actual grower integration standpoint. And philosophically, I think that's probably the right way to do it. I'm skeptical of trying to tell someone who probably knows what they're doing better than I do what they should be doing, right? And so it's really got to be I think there's a right balance with this kind of technology in terms of respecting the grower, respecting the native knowledge and the knowledge that's learned over time, and then just enhancing their decision-making ability with additional information. I don't know if that helps address your question or not. So.
Other questions?
No one wants to talk about deep neural nets? All right. Well, thanks so much, y'all.
All right. Thank you.